Good evening. A quorum being present, the House Committee on Finance is now in session. I'd like to recognize our sergeants at arms tonight, Reggie Stills, Marvin Lee, Cherry McGraw, Dave Layton, Warren Hawkins, and Dean Marshburn. We have no pages tonight. We have only one item on our agenda. That is the proposed committee substitute to House Bill 97, the 2015 Appropriations Act. We will be dealing with the finance portions only. I would like those that wish to submit amendments to go ahead and get them to the chair so we can stage things. Right now it looks like we will need to take a vote on this by 6:35 or start getting to the vote at 6:35 as we have session at 7. At this point, our staff tonight, we have Rodney Bazell, Denise Canada from Fiscal Research, Dan Edifall, Trina Griffin, our research staff, Jonathan Tart, Cindy, where's your name tag? Miss Averett. And we are ably clerked by Laura Perrier and Lynn Taylor. Representative Sain is recognized to present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, everyone. Hope you had a great weekend. If you're on appropriations, I'm sure you did not, but nevertheless, glad to have you here. Mr. Chairman, before we start, I know this is kind of a kickoff to what for some is Super Bowl week at the legislature. This is the business that the people sent us up here to do, and we'll get into some very serious discussions. But before we do, I wanted to relate to you a story that was given to me by my friend Carl Spackler. And Carl had the opportunity once upon a time to be the caddy for the Dalai Lama. And so at the end of it, he was afraid that the Dalai Lama would not tip him. And he said, "Hey, Lama, hey, how about a little something, you know, for the effort, you know?" And he says, "There won't be any money, but when you die, on your deathbed, you will receive total consciousness." So I got that going for me, which is nice. Members of the Finance Committee, here's to you in your pursuit of total consciousness, though I doubt today is the day. So, thank you. Another dare by my friend Ed Haynes. Nevertheless, we are here to consider and take up House Bill 97, the 2015 Appropriations Act, that you have probably all thumbed through that over the last 24 hours. Mr. Chairman, at this point, I would turn it over to staff to let them give the overview of the bill.
Ms. Griffin is recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, you should have four documents in your packet. There is a PCS, a bill summary, a fiscal memo, and a chart that looks like this. I'll go through the tax provisions, and Denise from Fiscal will run through the fee provisions. So first, starting with the income tax related changes in the PCS, the first item is an extension of the research and development credit for 4 years. This is the credit for research expenses, which includes university research expenses. The current sunset is January 1st, 2016, and the bill would extend that sunset until January 1st, 2020. The next item is an extension of the sunset for the renewable energy credit. And it does this in two parts. There is a 2-year extension for solar projects, and there is a 4-year extension for all other projects. The next item is the reestablishment of a modified historic rehabilitation credit. And this item is identical to the contents of House Bill 152, which has already been passed by the House and is currently in the Senate. And you can see that begins on page 2 of the PCS and runs through page 6.
Mr. Chairman, if I could interrupt.
That's insane.
I'm not sure that anyone has moved the PCS properly before, so we might want to take that
I
up.
Believe that's correct, although it was properly noticed. Representative Sain moves that the PCS be properly before the committee. Submitters in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like, or opposed, no. Motion carries. Representative Sainz recognized to continue the explanation.
Thank you, sir, and I will turn that over to staff. Ms. Griffin?
Sure. The next item is on page 6, and it's the senior tax deduction for medical expenses. And this would allow a taxpayer to take a deduction for their medical expenses to the extent they were deductible at the federal level, and if the expenses are incurred for a person who is age 65 or older. And this provision is effective for taxable years beginning on or after January 1, 2015. Part 2 of the bill are the sales tax changes. And the first item begins on page 7, line 39. And it would extend for 4 years the sales tax preferences that we have in law for motorsports teams. And there are 3 items. Currently, there is a sales tax refund on aviation fuel with an expiration of January 1, 2016. And this would extend that for 4 years. There is a 50% sales tax refund on tangible personal property purchased by a team that comprises any part of a motorsports vehicle with the exception of tires and accessories, also extended for 4 years. And in current law, there is an exemption to the sales tax on service contracts on items purchased by a motorsports team to the extent those items are eligible for the 50% refund. So to the extent this bill extends the sales tax refund on those items, it therefore would also extend the sales tax exemption on service contracts on those items. Moving on to the data center piece, this creates a sales tax exemption for data center equipment and electricity with a $75 million investment over a 5-year period, effective July 1st, 2015. And this piece is identical to the provision that has already been passed by the House in House Bill 117. The next item is a new exemption from the sales tax on service contracts that would apply to service contracts on qualifying aircraft or jet engines if the service contract is sold by the manufacturer of that aircraft or jet engine. And this provision is not effective until after the end of the biennium, July 1st, 2017. And your bill contains definitions for the aircraft and the jet engine. Part 3 of the bill is a motor fuel tax change, and that begins on page 10, line 27. And this would reduce the motor fuel tax rate from 36 cents to 33 cents on motor fuel, with the exception for diesel. And there's a chart in your summary that shows how the rate would apply as compared to what was passed in Senate Bill 20. The next item, Part 4, would require the Department of Commerce to use $500,000 from the utility account to establish a work-based experience pilot program at a qualifying cooperative innovative high school. It also requires Commerce to study the expansion of this program statewide. Part 5 of the bill is a bond authorization. It would authorize the issuance of two-thirds general obligation bonds for a health sciences building at ASU, an engineering building at NCSU, a science building at UNC Charlotte, a DHHS medical examiner facility at WFU, and phase 1 of the Highway Patrol Training Academy. And this authorization is contingent to the extent that these projects are not otherwise authorized by May 31st, 2016, to be financed with general obligation debt approved by the voters. And then finally, the last part of the bill are the fee provisions, and those begin on page 18 of your PCS, and Denise is going to run through those, and it might be helpful to turn to your chart for those. And the fees begin on page 3 of that chart.
And Ms. Canada is recognized to explain the fees.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to hold up the document that we're working from. As Trina said, starting on page 3, I'll give a very high-level summary of each fee. We also have all of the other fiscal analysts here who have more information about individual fees if there are questions. Starting in agriculture and natural and economic resources, drug manufacturer licensing and registration fees. This is an increase to two currently existing fees that are paid by out-of-state companies related to drug manufacturing and repackaging. Dynamic pricing for state parks and attractions. There's no cost estimate for the impact of this, but it would permit the would permit Diener to adopt flexible prices for entrance and related activity fees at parks, zoos, and aquariums. One item of note, it does not allow parks that do not have a current admission fee to charge an admission fee. However, any park that has an admission fee may change it, or also may change fees for incidentals within the park, cabin rentals, and the like. The next item, food manufacturer and retailer inspection fees, a $35,000 increase to the general fund from raising a currently existing fee. Repealing the apprenticeship fee, no impact on the general fund because the Department of Commerce expects to find the $170,000 within its budget. Currently, there's a $50 fee for persons that participate in the apprenticeship program, but that fee will be eliminated. Next, setting the Utilities Commission regulatory fee. The bill incorporates House Bill 356, which sets the utility reg fee into statute. Currently, the fee generates $15 million. This does not change the fee, so therefore the general fund will continue to receive the same amount of money, and there's no net impact. In general government, the insurance regulatory charge, again, like with the previous fee, there's no change. Setting the amount into the bill, the general fund receives already and will continue to receive approximately $33.5 million. The insurance regulatory fund. The next item relates to the state agency set-off debt collection. $3.5 to $4 million for East Carolina University and approximately $4 million for University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. These funds will go into the institutional trust funds and not into the general fund. Moving over to Health and Human Services, an increase in the North Carolina Medical Examiner Autopsy Fee from $1,250 to $1,750. Estimated benefit to the general fund of $1.8 million. Next, increasing the medical examiner fee. You'll see the cost estimate is a negative $110,000. That's because in some cases DHHS is paying this fee that goes to the counties. DHHS will pay an additional $110,000 when we increase this county level fee. Next, adult daycare and adult day health overnight certification. This item adds the adult daycare and adult day health programs to a currently existing fee of $225 per facility. Right now, the fee doesn't apply to those facilities. And the next item, provider application and recredentialing fee. This is another case where you'll see we've shown a $0 impact on the general fund. Currently, the general fund receives $15 million from this. This is maintaining an existing fee, so no net impact on the general fund. Mr. Chair, moving to Justice and Public Safety, the Certificate of Relief fee would be a new fee created by this bill, a fee of $50 for Certificate of Relief petitions. Staff do not have a fiscal impact or estimate for this provision. Next, clarifying the Boxing Commission fee. We'll see an impact to the general fund of a positive $4,000. Finally, in Justice and Public Safety, clarifying the hazardous materials fee. This is merely a wording change or a clarification with no financial impact, clarifying that the maximum hazardous materials facility fee applies per site. The amount that's already in the budget was calculated per site, so there's no fiscal impact, merely a change to the language. Moving to transportation, first, eliminating a 10-day trip permit and increasing the temporary tag fee. The temporary tag fee goes from $5 to $10. There's an estimated overall net impact of $800,000 benefit to the highway fund. And finally, the last item, increased DMV fees. You'll see in your packet there are 2 to 3 pages listed of all of the individual fees that are changing. The staff are available to talk about any one of these specific increases in depth, but for an overall strategy, there's a 50% increase in almost all of the DMV fees that you see listed here. This is something similar to what the legislature did in 2005, taking all of the fees, increasing them by approximately 50%. And you'll see we've outlined in the table the impact on various fees, the civil penalty and forfeiture fund, the highway fund, and the highway trust fund. Okay, thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there questions for staff? And I would ask members to hold debate. Let's get questions, and then we'll get into amendments. And then debate the bill as amended. Questions for staff? Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for staff. On the medical examiner autopsy fee, who is it that pays those fees? Is it the district attorney or superior court judge? Does it come from their budget? Who pays those fees?
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Denise Thomas, Fiscal Research.
Ms. Thomas is recognized.
Okay. Currently, those fees are paid in 90% of the cases, those fees are paid by the counties in which the person who deceased resided. If the person who died in the county is not a resident of the county, then the autopsy fee is paid by the state.
Follow up. Any other questions? Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question of curiosity on page 4, section 6.9, when the increase in the medical examiner fee, it was said that the impact of the general fund was actually that we would lose $110,000 because DHHS pays for a lot of this. I guess my question is, why are we doing it if it's going to cost us money? Can somebody explain, is there a good reason that we want to increase that fee if it's actually going to cost the state money?
Ms. Thomas is...
Mr. Chair, this is one of a series of proposals that came out of the HHS LOC Medical Examiner Oversight Committee this past interim. The fee for the county medical examiners is $100 per case, and the department recommended increasing that fee so that you could get a better quality of medical case reports coming out of the medical examiners. They will also be required to undergo more mandatory training. And so this is a fee that is paid by the counties and the states to the 450 medical examiners who are out there conducting death investigations.
Follow up. Representative Warren.
Thank you. And for staff again, who just answered it?
Ms. Thomas?
Yes. My question to you is this an incentive perhaps to try to get more medical examiners to actually leave the office to go examine these cases? It seemed to me that the Charlotte Observer did a lengthy study about the number of cases that are actually investigated. I just wonder if this increase was part of an incentive to enhance that.
Ms. Thomas?
Yes, this is part of a series of recommendations to improve the quality of the death investigations conducted at the county level, and that would include improving the training of the persons who are doing the death investigations and improving the compensation that they are given for doing those cases.
Follow up. Any more questions for staff? All right, at this point, we have two technical amendments to start the fund tonight. The first one will be AMC 47, version 2. It is a page and a half. This reformats section 2A to make it more readable. It changes no comment. I'm sending this one forward on behalf of the committee. Are there questions about the amendment? It's purely technical. You should have it. It's already been distributed. H97-AMC, Alpha Mike Charlie-47, bracket Victor .2. Okay. So many as favor the adoption of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is agreed to. Second amendment is ASV, that's Alpha Sierra Victor -46, version 1. It moves to amend the bill on page 37, lines 16 through 39 by deleting the lines. In the bill, we are eliminating 10-day tags. This section of the bill inadvertently doubles the fee on the 10-day tags that we eliminate on the previous page. So this is once again a technical cleanup. Moved on behalf of the committee. So many as favor adoption of the motion say aye. Opposed, no. The motion is agreed to. Okay, we have an amendment that's being passed out by Representative Howard. AMC, Alpha Mike Charlie.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
What amendment did we just vote on?
That would be AMC 47 V2. We are getting ready to take up, excuse me, AS. Wait a minute, I'm sorry. Okay, we did AMC 47 V2 and then ASV Alpha Sierra Victor 46 V1. We are now taking up Alpha Mike Charlie 46
V1. I just didn't get the amendment until after the vote was cast. So,
thank you for your faith in the chair, Representative Jeter. Does everyone have a copy of AMC 46 V1? Okay, Representative Howard is recognized to explain her amendment.
Thank you, members of the committee. The utility fund was created in 2002, the Job Development Investment Grant. It's been something that we have been very protective of for over the years. Most of you already know, it's the counties that are classified in Tier 1 and Tier 2. And I believe this amendment will exclude the counties in Tier 2. And there's about 40 of you. If you are not familiar with the counties that are in Tier 2, you might want to take a look at it. This fund was not developed to do education. It's sort of a strong reach to say that that's the purpose that it should be. Currently there's about $19.5 million in the fund. $15 million is already committed, obligated. So it doesn't leave a whole lot of money in there. When we developed this fund and started putting money in it under JDIG, it was to help small cities and large cities, but mostly Tier 1, Tier 2, exclusively for sewer, water, broadband, infrastructure. And I just don't believe that this is the intent of what that fund was established to do. And then looking at the bill, I'm not sure, since finance hasn't been privileged to see the entire bill until late yesterday, early this morning. I'm careful on my statement, but I'm in talking to some of the appropriation chairs, I understand that there's already been about close to $12 to $13 million already put in for this purpose, and this is another $500,000. Taking money out of the utility fund, and if you live in any of those Tier 2 counties, you are excluded. $500,000 will definitely come out of Alamance, Alexander, Avery, Burke, Caldwell, Catawba, Cherokee, Cleveland, Craven, Cumberland, Currituck, Bayer, Davidson, Davie, Dublin, Franklin, Gaston, Granville, Guilford, Harnett, Hoke, Lee, Madison, McDowell, Mitchell, Onslow, Pamlico, Person, Pitt, Polk, Randolph, Rowan, Sampson, Stanley, Stokes, Transylvania, Wayne, and Wilkes. So you are taking the opportunity to access these funds away from your county and doing a pilot project. And that was never the intent when this fund was created, because I was here when this fund was created, and I would ask you to support the amendment.
Representative Adams.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'd hope to say something useful, but Representative Howard has said it. I'm in complete agreement with her. I think that if we're going to come up with a fund for educational purposes, that it should be specifically designed for that purpose, and I think the utility fund speaks for itself. Thank you.
Representative Collins?
I'm trying to figure out where we are. I have no idea which amendment we're on or what part of the bill it applies to. I can't seem to find an amendment that talks about the part of the bill she was just referring to.
Okay, the amendment is H97-AMC-46 version 1. And it says, moves to amend the bill on page 10, line 50, to page 11, line 35 by deleting the lines.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Sanks.
Just
Chairman
as a
Sanks.
Courtesy to the committee, Representative Jeter, do you have the amendment?
Yes, he does, because I just sent it to him.
Yeah, it's just distracting with the arms flying in the air and everything else. Thanks.
Is there anyone that does not have a copy of an amendment H97-AMC-46 version 1? Representative Collins, do you have the amendment? Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, to debate the amendment. I have asked staff to hand out two handouts that should be coming around. They look like this, that are an overview from our fiscal research division on the Industrial Development Fund utility account. And I absolutely respect Representative Howard's work in developing this. And this proposal came out of the work that I did on the NC Competes Bill and House Bill 117, when we really dug into these different economic development tools. And as you see under the statutory authority, the purpose is to assist local government units of the most economically distressed counties in the state in creating and retaining jobs. And then the purpose was really in various infrastructure, which was in very high demand at the time when this was put into place and has been working well for our Tier 1 and Tier 2 counties. On the second page, you see the chart that shows the number of requests and where the funds have been distributed. And what's happened is that as we've built up infrastructure, we've accumulated money in this account, and in our last budget cycle, $11 million was moved out of the intended purpose of economic development in Tier 1 and Tier 2 counties and gone to random general fund things. So one of the other things we did in House Bill 117 that we passed was to expand the uses of this fund to not just new job creation, but also that's reasonably expected to maintain jobs. And then we have some counties that have jobs but do not have the workforce, and that is going through education, but in some cases it needs to be more collaborative and driven out of the economic developers. And so what we find is when there's projects that really do what we say we want them to do, which is break down the silos, we have a really hard time funding that because it's not all education, it's not all commerce. And so I have worked with the Department of Commerce, and they are supportive of this pilot program to look at, are they doing the right job collaborating with education and breaking down those silos in order to achieve that goal of economic development? And when it gets rolled out statewide, it would be for Tier 1 and Tier 2 counties to figure out how we do that. So that's the work that they're going to be doing, and I would respectfully ask that you defeat the amendment and know that Commerce is on board with trying to do a collaborative approach. And this would go more towards capital infrastructure that's needed for facilities to allow for work-based experience programs.
Further discussion and debate?
Yes, sir.
Representative Cunningham?
Yes, I have a question for Representative Howard.
Does the lady yield?
Yes.
Representative Howard, would this not set a precedent, because this has never been done before?
Yes, ma'am. I believe it would, because if you read the total provision, it goes on to do a study, and yes, ma'am, I think it would.
Thank you.
Representative Howard's debate recognized to debate the amendment a second time.
Well, a question, please, sir.
Yes,
to Representative Susan Martin.
Does the lady yield? The lady yields.
Representative Martin, like I said, I am not privileged to all of the information as I wish we were, but have you not already received over $400,000 to do this in another provision somewhere else? I believe it's F2 in a money report.
Representative Howard, I am not aware of that, but I think that this work that needs to get done with commerce and education is very important. So I'm trying to solve a bigger problem than just look for immediate funds.
Is there anyone from staff that can answer that question? Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you for your patience as I get my documents in order here. Chris Nordstrom from the Fiscal Research Division. And the question was, is there a money item that provides $400,000 to this same project? I'm not sure necessarily which school would receive the planning money that is outlined in Section 4.1 of what's before us right now. The language in there currently lists several criteria for who would be awarded that money, but does not specify the name of the school. I would note that on page, I believe what Representative Howard was referring to is page F2, item number 10, Cooperative and Innovative High Schools. There is money in there in the first year to provide $100,000 non-recurring planning grant to the Wilson Academy of Applied Technology.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Representative Adams.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In Catawba County, at Catawba County Community College, something very similar to this has been done in the form of a simulated hospital and a furniture academy. My observation would be simply that two things. One, Tier 1 and Tier 2 counties should be eligible for this, and also that a community college is a better setting for this so that all local high schools can participate. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Cotham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for Mr. Nordstrom that I think he just answered. So only one school in the state is eligible for this. Is that what you just said?
Yes, ma'am. Chris Nordstrom from Fiscal Research. If you look at the second line of Section 4.1, it says, Department of Commerce shall establish a work-based pilot program and shall select one qualifying school for the pilot program.
Follow-up.
Follow-up, Jason.
And Mr. Nordstrom, do we know how many students are in this one school?
The Section 4.1 does not name the school that would be getting this grant. So the answer is no.
Representative Howard, did you want to debate your bill a second time? I think you just asked a question and it got taken away from you.
Well, and I'll just stay the course. Representative Bali to simply say that this fund was not ever created to do this, and the member referenced House Bill 117 that has passed this chamber. It has not passed in the Senate to change the uses of the fund. So until there is a consensus on both sides of the aisle that this utility fund, which you know what the purpose was and is and continues to be, and I just don't think that this is in good judgment for us to do this right now and start on this path. As Representative Cunningham said, it opens a brand new door. And I would ask that you support the amendment.
Representative Martin, did you want to debate again? Ladies recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just comment that I don't think that this sets a precedent, because there have been lots of times when this fund has been swept and used for other purposes that maybe don't have anything to do with economic development. And the reason we're doing it for a pilot is so that Commerce can do the work to determine, is there another fund that's needed? Is there some other way? Are they collaborating in an appropriate way with education in order to come back with a proposal that would support these types of programs moving forward in community colleges and across the state? So I'd ask you to defeat the amendment and let us do the work through the pilot and move forward.
Representative Blust,
inquiry of the chair.
Gentleman's recognized for inquiry.
Is it against the rules for someone to state what school it is that qualifies?
Representative Martin, would you state the school? Are you willing to?
Well, I know that where I've been trying to solve the problem is that the Wilson Academy of Applied Technology, which is not up and running because they don't have the infrastructure in place, which is not traditional infrastructure, pipes in the ground, but it's physical updates required to make it so that industrial training and equipment that's being donated by companies who need skilled workers can be put into play. So it's infrastructure in that way, which doesn't come out of the education funding. So they're not able to open without additional assistance. Now, it's possible there are a lot of other counties out there who are working, as we heard about the furniture manufacturer, who may be able to qualify for these funds and who are interested over time to figure out how we can do this. And if you're able to open, then maybe you don't need that. But in our economic development directors across the state have different needs, and I think we need to have a toolbox that provides options for them of what is required for their county.
All right, at this point, I've got at least six more amendments beyond this one, and we need to vote this by 6:45. So I would ask the committee's indulgence. Let's go ahead and take the vote on this one. Well, Representative Carney, you did.
Just one quick question of the bill sponsor, if I may.
Ladies recognized.
Representative Martin, is this a charter school, or is it an existing school right now, or is it waiting for funding to be developed?
Ladies recognized to answer the question.
It has been approved as a cooperative and innovative high school with the additional waiver that's required to have it locate on other than the community college campus, because there's no space there. So it will be, if funds are approved, it will be located part on the high school campus if they can renovate, and part on the community college. But it's part of a new, not yet opened, cooperative and innovative high school.
Okay. The question before the committee is the adoption of Amendment AMC 46 Version 1 by Representative Howard, to remove this section of the bill creating the pilot project. So many as favor the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The opinion of the chair, the ayes have it. The amendment is agreed to. The next amendment is also by Representative Howard, ASV-48 version 1. Does everybody have it? Representative Cheater has it, so we should be good to go. Representative Howard is recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Bali. The an issue that many of us have gotten lots and lots of emails and had conversation is the medical expenses that we eliminated in the tax rewrite last year. And this amendment would simply restore that medical expenses, and also remove the age limit, which was set at you couldn't start until 65. There's a lot of parents that have disabled children that need this desperately. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would ask for support of the amendment to restore the medical expenses deductions.
Representative Singh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question for the amendment sponsor. Representative Howard, with your amendment and that expansion, do you know what that would cost in addition?
We've had several projections, but I think it's somewhere around 50. It's more than the 26, but it's 40. I believe my counterpart's back here. It's 44 million.
Follow, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
I mean, can we get some type of definitive answer on that instead of a guess? A range, or it didn't sound like you were certain.
It's 44.
Further discussion, further debate. Representative Dollar.
I would just ask you to vote against the amendment. It's not that I don't share the amendment sponsor's desire. I think that certainly the heart is in the right place, and I think a lot of us would like to be able to do this. But at a very minimum, it's going to cost the expense that's already been mentioned, and possibly cost more than that. And so for that reason, you're moving major pieces of money around that you don't have. So I would ask you to really to vote to not accept this amendment. And as the bill moves along and gets to the other side and gets in conference, we can certainly, it would certainly be a subject for conversation and discussion. This amendment, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, would cost way, way too much money at this time, and I would respectfully ask you to oppose the amendment.
Ms. Griffin, could you tell us what the cost of the amendment would be?
Mr. Chairman, and I'll look to Brian in case I've got this incorrect. He can correct me, but the amendment would be an additional $30.4 million. So in the budget currently, the senior deduction for just those age 65 and over has a cost of $23.6 million, and the amendment would cost $54 million total. So it's an additional $30.4
million. Thank you. Representative Jeter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is one amendment where I have found the most admiration for. I understand Chairman Dollar's concerns about the appropriation side of the budget. Unfortunately, I haven't seen the appropriation side of the budget. From that respect, I think if there's one thing we should do, it's medical deductions for not only our seniors, but for everyone. It's children that are having expenses that affect seniors. There's a lot of groups that aren't included. If we cap this at 65, $30.4 million seems to me to be a reasonable request, and I urgently ask us to support this amendment.
Further discussion, further debate. Representative Jones. Oh, sorry, Representative Hager. I had you down. I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying not to talk a whole lot today. Now, y'all find that may unusual. On this, I tend to agree with Representative Jeter and Representative Howard on this. I think this is just something we need to do. I think it's the right thing for our people in North Carolina. And we seem to have found money for a whole lot of other things. It would be nice if we could step up for our seniors and folks that have high medical expenses in North Carolina.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I concur with the previous speakers. I think as we continue down the trail of amendments here, we find plenty of opportunities where there are carve-outs and deductions for particular folks that we can look at in saving money. But I do think that the medical deduction is one that we should allow. And quite frankly, I think if we're going to allow it, we should allow it for everyone. And if we're not going to allow it, we shouldn't allow it for anyone. I don't think we should practice age discrimination. I have great respect for senior citizens 65 and over, and I'm rapidly becoming closer to that group every day. But the truth of the matter is that younger people have less disposable income on average. And it's already been pointed out that there are children with needs, there are younger people with needs. I don't think we should give a deduction to someone that's 65 and not give it to someone that's 64. It's an arbitrary deduction, and we ought not to be picking winners and losers in that way, if you will. And for all those reasons, I would vote for this amendment.
Representative Stamm. I'd oppose the amendment. You know, you can make an argument for every deduction. Just deduct it all. But what you do there, Representative Jones, is you then make it much more difficult to reduce the personal income tax that you want to do by throwing in another $30 million. We just can't start unraveling tax reform at this stage. And when the bill gets to the next stage, you're going to have to come up with another $30 million of cuts that you want to propose. It may be free here where it's not out of order, but money is money. And if you spend it here, you can't spend it somewhere else.
Representative Jones.
To debate the amendment a second time. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't going to speak again, but since my friend Representative Stamm addressed me, I do want to say that I concur with his way of thinking. As far as unraveling tax reform, I'm extremely concerned about this entire bill and how we're doing that. And quite honestly, if this amendment fails, I would be more than happy to see someone offer an amendment that just took out the medical deduction all the way around. My point is that if we're going to do it, we should do it for everyone. It should not just be for 65 and over. And if we're going to choose any special deductions of all the ones that are mentioned in this bill, I think the medical deduction is the best one. So for the purpose of this amendment, it changes what's already there and just takes away the age discrimination, and so I will vote for this amendment.
Further discussion, further debate? The amendment before the committee is to amend the medical expenses in page 7, lines 30 to 33. So many in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it. Representative Stamm is recognized to send forth an amendment, AMC 49, version 1. Representative Stamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And since the committee just spent $30 million, this is an opportunity to get $44 million back. The best place to understand it is not the amendment itself, but in your committee summary, the bottom of page 2, this relates to the research and development credit. And according to the fiscal note, this will cost $44 million a year for 16-17 for 4 years. That's $172 million. I estimate present value of that $150 million. So we're talking big bucks here. It's not been discussed in committee, it's as far as I know, in either side. And I don't claim to know a whole lot about it, although I spent my youth in labs, because my father was head of research for a couple of major North Carolina manufacturers. But here's the problem. If you look at it here, at the bottom of page 2 of your committee summary, most of this credit is 1.25 to 3.25% of the amount of the expenditure. Now, I don't believe 3.25% is enough to actually induce an actual research. That's not why companies do the research. That's not big enough to get the research done. They do it for other reasons, for business reasons. And of course, if you give them a whopping percentage, maybe they'll do research they don't really need for the money, if you give it, you know, 100% credit or 50. But then you have this anomaly that if they get it done, the research done at a North Carolina university research expense,
then it's a 20% credit. Now, just think about that for a minute. What is that saying? I guess what it's saying is that whoever constructed this, because remember the purpose of this is to induce research and development. I guess they're saying that the research done at UNC is only 1/6 as valuable as research you get at a private lab. How can that be? That's almost a slam on UNC. Or you can say, well, this is really just a disguised subsidy to UNC, in which case it ought to be in the education budget instead of here in this tax credit. And I would encourage you, since you just spent $30 million that we didn't have, vote for this amendment, and you can at least get it back. And then maybe we can talk about the policy at a subsequent meeting where we actually discuss R&D rather than just have it as part of a package that's, you know, given to you today.
Representative Martin.
Get to debate the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to share with you all, this came up for discussion a lot when we were talking about the overall strategy for incentives and economic development. We had the report from UNC Center for Competitive Economies that was completed and reported back in January of 2009, and a lot of that recommended reducing incentives and tax credits, reducing tax credits and moving to lower our corporate tax rate, with the one exception. And in their recommendations, it was to retain the North Carolina's research and development tax credit, and that was the only investment-based tax credit incentive examined that was correlated with companies adding new jobs both before and after receiving the incentive, and is also distinct from other investment-based tax credits in that it is available to companies regardless of their industry, business type, or size. Corporations, partnerships, and limited liability companies were eligible. And I'm not exactly familiar with this language, but this is based on the report. So they said it enhances the prospect of its use by firms in distressed areas and incents innovative corporate strategies that undergird growth companies regardless of industry. So we did move forward with a lot of those recommendations of eliminating a lot of the credits and reducing our corporate tax structure, and they did say that the discretionary grants like the JDIG programs were a better approach than these tax credits, except for this one tax credit. So with that in mind and that research to base it on, I would say to defeat the amendment.
Representative Sane.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Representative Martin summed it up very well. I'll just echo that, and from conversations I've had with the business community and with entities looking to come here, the R&D tax credit is very important. Until we get to a zero income tax and complete tax reform in its entirety, I think this is something that we need to keep in our toolbox as far as business recruitment and development. Thank you.
Mr. Bailey.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Representative Howard.
I'd like to help Representative Stam, since we seem to always be on the same page. When we did the tax reform 2 years ago, started it, Representative Lewis, a lot of people were involved. There was a conversation in with respect to the R&D tax credit. It was very evident in speaking to the various groups that when the corporate tax reached 3%, that the need for these credits would not be as important or actually important at all. There was an unwritten, I guess, gentleman's agreement that when the corporate tax drops to 3%, this will be eliminated. With the way the trigger is written currently, fortunately or unfortunately, however you look at it, that corporate tax will hit that trigger. Not this year, but next year. And it appears that we're extending the credits through 2020 with this amendment. So I would ask that you support the amendment, because I believe it's the right thing to do, and there's recall on that agreement.
Representative Stam.
And finally, this is an argument that will appeal to all of you, almost all of you. I read that 2009 study, and if it was the same credit that we're talking about today, and I believe it is, if I recall, it was like 80% of these credits went to businesses in Wake, Mecklenburg, or Durham County. So when I argue this debate here, I'm not arguing a provincial matter. Rather, it's for the good of the state as a whole.
Representative Jones. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be very brief. I wanted to work my way back into Representative Stam's good graces since we argued on the last one, but I do totally agree with him on this one and with Representative Howard. I think they've already made the comments that I would make, but I do think this is a good amendment, and I'll support it.
Okay. Representative Sain.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I hate to interrupt the bro hug, but I hope you guys work it out. You know, Representative Stam, just want to make the statement that the reason that a lot of that is in those three or four counties that you mentioned is that is indeed where a lot of the talent and the university talent involved in some of the research and development is located, and it's also where, you know, bulk of people are located, so I would expect it to be there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dollar.
Question for staff. Does staff have a breakdown of the companies that what percentage of the companies that receive the R&D tax credit will be receiving it as part of a corporate return subject to the corporate income tax, and what percentage would be receiving it being taxed under the individual tax rates or other tax rates other than the corporate that was cut?
Jonathan Tartt's recognized to answer the question.
Representative Dollar, we do not have that type of breakdown on that credit.
Follow up
on that. Is it fair to say that, or is it not fair to say, that there are some percentage of businesses receiving the R&D tax credit or the benefits of the credit that are not taxed under the corporate income tax?
Mr. Tartt?
Well, it's fair to say that if one of those entities was organized as an LLC or an S-Corp, that the credit would pass through and be subject to personal income tax or be used to reduce personal income tax. If it was not organized as an S-Corp or LLC and instead organized as a C-Corp, it would be used to reduce the corporate income tax.
Mr. Chairman?
Follow up.
And that's the point, although we may not have what the figure is, the point is that not everyone who is receiving the R&D tax credit is taxed under the corporate rate. But beyond that, you know, this is a request of the governor.
So,
and this basically means jobs. I mean, if you want to cut it out, it, you know, it's jobs. And one thing that I think is very strange that I hear from time to time is, you know, why is it a problem for the jobs to be in Wake County and Mecklenburg County and, you know, Durham or Greensboro or Winston-Salem? I mean, I never quite understand that, because the money comes in. If somebody can show me which dollar that we appropriate tomorrow came from my home county of Alamance and which one came from my home county now of Wake, I would like somebody to do that. Obviously, the whole point of this is jobs. And as Chairman Martin pointed out, we have studies. We know from our friends in universities, in the university system, this is an effective jobs building credit. So if you don't like incentives, and I understand my dear friend Representative Stam doesn't like them, then obviously you're going to vote no. I can appreciate that position. But if you understand that some of these have value and that they have been tested, and this does mean jobs, I would respectfully request that you vote down the gentleman's amendment.
Representative Blust.
I have a question. I'm trying to look it up, but I'm not fast enough. Is this credit refundable And if it's not refundable and our corporate tax rate is getting ready to drop, why is it a level fiscal hit for several years? Wouldn't, if it were non-refundable, wouldn't the amount lost go down when the tax rate goes down for corporations?
You're correct that it is similar to cash, you know, like, as you're referring to. We've seen the credits utilized at a pretty steady rate around $44 million a year. That could potentially reduce them. It's not likely to eliminate taxpayers being able to take them because there are carry-forwards associated with the credit. So if there's any lower impact, it's likely timing, not loss of the impact.
Follow up. But is it refundable, or is it just a credit against actual income?
It can offset 50% of income or franchise tax liability, up to 50% in a given year. And then to the extent they're limited by that cap, the installment, or pardon me, the credit can be carried forward.
Follow up. Representative Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will be brief. I have a very good friend who graduated from NC State some years ago with a PhD in plasma physics. He got a job with a large pharmaceutical company locally, and he spent the last 40 years in medical manufacturing. Recently, we had a conversation. He made a remark that I will use to judge my vote here. He said, "Research is what you do when you don't have anything else to do." This money will be better. Money will be better utilized going into manufacturing through a reduction in income taxes rather than a research and development tax credit. Thank you.
Further discussion. Further debate. The question before the committee is adoption of Amendment AMC 49 by Representative Stam. So many as favor the adoption, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. I'm going to call for that. If so many as favor the adoption, please raise your hand and hold it up.
Do y'all have the same number? Okay, try it again.
Keep them up.
That's what I got.
Thank you. So many as opposed the motion, please raise your hands. The motion fails 17 to 20. Representative Carney is recognized to send forth an amendment, ASV 41-V1. The lady is recognized to explain her amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I want to thank you for letting this amendment get heard. This is in response to the Senate Bill 20 that passed out of here with a lot of debate on the floor, and a lot of you all didn't like that piece that was in there. This was the decoupling from the federal government. This amendment would just have us conform to the federal income exclusion with the state. This is where if your home is foreclosed on or in short sale, your loan would be forgiven if we conform to the federal government. And I'm just asking that you give this serious consideration. There are a lot of people that are, the economy's on the uprise, but there are a lot of people in 2014 that are going to be hit mighty hard, and I would ask that you give this serious consideration and support the amendment.
Excuse me, does everyone have amendment ASV 41-V1 moves to amend the bill on
page 43, part 6A, conform to income tax exclusion for discharge of principal residence indebtedness for 2014 taxable year. So everybody got it? Okay. Further discussion, further debate? Representative Mark.
I was just curious if you had a cost associated with that amendment, maybe for staff.
Yep. Mr. Tart.
This would reduce general fund revenues for the 15-16 year by approximately $14 million.
Representative Dollar.
Members of the committee, I would ask you to vote no on this amendment. Appreciate it being offered, but I think staff sort of cut to the chase as far as the budget is concerned. That's $14 million that that we do not need to be putting toward this particular purpose.
Representative Jeter.
Lewis. If someone forecloses or has a short sale in their home, the bank has renegotiated their debt. Their debt is lowered by $20,000. Currently, we're going to make them pay taxes on that $20,000. My question to you is, if that same family had declared bankruptcy, would they then have to pay the income tax on the $20,000?
It's a question for staff. Mr. Tart.
Representative Jeter, they would still be liable for that income tax liability. How it comes out in bankruptcy, I can't say.
So
follow up.
Thank you. I apologize, Mr. Chair. So the bankruptcy does not necessarily eliminate the liability per se.
Mr. Tart. Ms. Griffin.
I'm not sure. I'd have to look at that in terms of bank.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Blust.
I deal with this from time to time. If it's income that is discharged in a case under Title 11, which is the bankruptcy code, it is not under federal tax law income from the discharge of indebtedness. So Representative Jeter is right. As long as they file their case in bankruptcy, then it's not counted as discharge of indebtedness income, so there's no income.
Follow up.
The gentleman's recognized.
So if I understand this correctly, if you have a short sale and your debt goes down by $20,000, you have to pay tax on it unless you declare bankruptcy. So if we don't pass this amendment, we almost encourage our citizens who probably have a struggle anyway because they formed a short sale or a foreclosure to declare bankruptcy, which I don't think should be the message of this General Assembly.
Representative Lewis.
I suppose this is in some way a follow-up of what Representative Jeter was just asking about, perhaps to our staff. At what point did the federal government and therefore North Carolina decide to join them, stop taxing mortgage debt for forgiveness? Was this not a part of a short-term stimulus package?
Ms. Griffin?
Representative Lewis, I may not have heard the beginning of your question, but let me know if I don't quite have it. But Congress passed the Mortgage Debt Relief Act in 2007 as a result of the housing crisis, and was intended had temporary sunsets on it, and the feds have continued to extend that. And so last year, North Carolina did not conform to this, and the feds had continued to extend it one more year. So this is only for the 2014 tax year.
Mr. Chairman,
follow up.
So to be clear, the idea of the forgiveness of mortgage debt was originally brought about by Congress as a short-term stimulus type thing,
and North Carolina complied for a while, but in fact did not comply for last tax year. So this would actually be complying with something we didn't comply with last year.
You're correct. And the general rule is that the forgiveness of debt is considered income, just as a general rule for tax purposes.
Mr. Chairman, just to be clear, did Ms. Griffin just say the general rule is that forgiveness of debt is taxable?
I believe the lady was saying that all debt forgiveness is considered taxable income with the exception of mortgage under a short sale under provisions of this federal bill to which we are not currently conforming. Zoka. Wait a minute, take Zoka off. Okay, Representative Stamm.
Yes, I oppose the amendment. If you don't allow the taxation of forgiveness of debt, then people can manipulate the tax code. So I pay Bob Steinberg here, and instead of calling it a payment or a wage, I lend it to him, and then I just forgive the indebtedness later. That's why we tax this thing, so that people don't, particularly rich people, don't use it as a dodge to not pay taxes.
Yeah, I don't particularly like the amendment because I don't think we ought to treat people who do this in 2014 differently than we do other years, which are going forward. And I don't like the idea of, as Representative Stans mentioned, of not classifying forgiven debt as income. I will point out, however, though, that so far, I think with the exception of the First Amendment we passed, we're voting in the direction of busting the budget each time. And if we had voted for Representative Stams' last amendment, we could have exactly paid for the last generosity we just passed plus this one.
Further discussion, further debate. Representative Carney's recognized.
Just one more comment, and I understand what we're all talking about, the revenue in here. That's what we're here for. And you know, with our revenues up in the state and with the economy on the rise, I think we're called upon to be bold here, and I want to remind you that the citizens that are impacted by this budget that we're all voting for and developing are the people that send us here, and it's not for us. And that we have to take into consideration all of the needs across the state, and I will say this is 1 year to stay in conformance with the federal government and let these people that were hit hard by the bad economy, let them have that 1 year, and then we move forward. It goes away.
Further discussion, further debate. So many as favor the amendment, say aye. Those opposed, say no. In the opinion of the chair, the noes have it. Representative Alexander is recognized to send forward ASV XR 43 version 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment is very straightforward. It would have us to treat, as far as sales tax is concerned, yachts, private aircraft, and automobiles exactly the same. And it would raise a little revenue to help pay for some of the things we've just done.
Representative Lewis.
Yeah.
Paul. Mr. Chairman, I just had an inquiry to Representative Alexander, if I could.
Does gentleman yield for a question?
Yes.
Gentleman yields.
Do you have any idea how much advertising revenue this is going to cost in 2016 if the Democrats can't run this against the Republican nominee for the Senate? This is a big deal.
Further discussion, further debate.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dollar.
What is the, can we get staff to answer, what is the physical impact?
Mr. Tart.
depending on when you enacted this amendment, if you did, this is about $35 million in increased revenue per fiscal year.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I understand staff, so this is a tax increase. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
I'll answer. It would result in about $35 million in additional revenue per year.
Follow up? Okay, Chair would like to make an announcement in consultation with the Speaker. What we will do is run up to 6:45. We will recess the committee and we'll resume after the close of session. Unless we get through the rest of our agenda in 10 minutes. Representative Collins.
I just have a question, I guess, for staff, although I don't know that probably none of them are old enough to have remembered this. Seems like to me, I remember back in the 1970s, we did this or something very much like this, and it completely shut down the boat building industry in North Carolina, if I remember correctly. Is that not correct?
Further discussion, Representative Stamm.
And the question to staff is whether that $35 million figure is just based on what it brought in last year, or is there any analysis of the effect from the last time we tried this?
This is based on sales tax data and the impact of the cap.
Follow up?
You live and learn.
I
will vote for it.
Okay. Representative Collins is recognized.
Just one comment to follow up on my question. Folks that can afford to buy aircraft or boats can afford to go to another state to buy them. And so if we're going to tax them higher than anybody else is, we're not going to sell them.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lutke.
I'm trying hard to understand the logic of some of the comments. First, Representative Collins, you were saying before you needed $40 million in revenue because you were upset about the, you know, and you expressed concern about the research development tax credit going through, and you were concerned about the loss of $40 million. Here's $35 or maybe a little bit less, depending on what happens. I understand that. My question is, you seem to have more concern here for people on the high end than people who are lower income people, because remember, lower income people, the middle class buys automobiles and they pay 3% without a cap. And so we're not talking about they're buying a Mercedes Benz, they just have to buy a middle income car and they will pay the full freight. There will be no cap on them. There's no cap. They can pay whatever it is times 3%. And what we're saying is that if you buy an airplane or a yacht, You don't multiply by 3%. You put a cap on it. Now, where's the fairness there for the middle class? When you tell the middle class they've got to pay the full 3%, and you tell yacht buyers and airplane buyers that they have a cap.
May I answer that, Mr. Chairman?
I mean, it's rhetorical, or you can answer, sir.
I'd like to answer that.
Representative Collins is recognized.
I thought I'd already answered it. We've tried this once before, and it drove the boat builders out of North Carolina. I was living in New Bern at the time when this was passed the first time, and they were working-class boat builders who were put out of jobs. Those are the folks I'm worried about. I'm not worried about the folks buying the boats. I'm worried about the folks building the boats. You know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing you've done before and expecting different results. And if we think we'll get different results this time and the people in North Carolina that want to buy boats and planes won't go to Rhode Island or somewhere to buy them, we're just fooling ourselves.
Representative Sain.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just point out that, you know, we receive no tax revenue on boats built in South Carolina, and I'll just leave it at that.
Representative Adams. Representative Steinberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I come from boat building country, and the boat building industry is just getting back on its feet after the last couple of years. And I would echo the comments of some of the others as it relates to who actually is being punished here. The folks who can pay the tax, this isn't going to make any difference to them one way or the other. But they won't be buying their boats here, which means the boat manufacturers will be, who have just begun to rehire people and start to really move forward
I have two that are actually expanding their businesses, and those are the folks that are going to be hurt by this. I don't want to go back again to where we were just a few years ago.
Representative Hager.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a real quick comment. I agree with what my colleague here sits beside me on the House floor said, also Representative Collins, but I think instead of raising the tax up on boats and planes, let's lower the tax on cars.
Further discussion, further debate. Representative Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and just a few things so when people vote, they can make sure they have a factual basis. I didn't hear staff say that the tax that was in question regarding the boat building industry was a North Carolina tax. My understanding, it was a federal tax, number one. Number two, I did note that Representative Steinberg said the boat building industry, that happened many years ago, but that the boat building industry recently is just getting back on their feet. So that tax went away, and that did not bring the boat building industry back. So I think we got a false equivalency there. And then finally, we have boats that are built in North Carolina, but they're sold throughout the United States. So the question of where that tax is paid and who owes it is another item that we need to have a clear view of. We're going to vote on this and vote based on the facts.
Representative Warren.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess a question for staff for clarification. When the amendment reads the sale price of each aircraft or boat, so my question is, do bass boats qualify, pontoons, or those be subject to the tax?
Yes.
A follow-up?
Follow up.
So it's not just rich people that be subjected to this tax, but the average working Joe, who, like my son, who has a bass boat, my family's considered buying a pontoon, we'd be subjected to the tax too. So I don't think not voting for this is exclusive as being portrayed as something for the rich, but this also would be a heavy tax on the average citizen and probably something that would cost them heavily when it comes to the recreational activities, so I'm not voting for it.
Representative Lutke.
Mr. Chairman, just very briefly, this only affects purchases more than $50,000. So if your pontoon costs $50,000, there's a 3% of the cap of $1,500, and that means it's got to cost more than $50,000 before this kicks in. So all your smaller pontoon and everything else, they don't cost more than $50,000.
Do you have a boat?
Do I?
Uh-huh.
No, sir.
Neither do I, because a lot of them do cost more than $50,000.
But not the ones Representative Warren's talking about. I just want to make that point. Unless it's above $50,000, this doesn't bother you.
Further discussion, further debate. Some in favor of the adoption of the motion, say aye. Those opposed, no. Motion fails. Representative Setzer is recognized to send forward Amendment ATM-14V2. Representative Setzer.
We haven't done. Yeah. We're supposed to put that one out. Okay. All right.
Chair apologizes. Actually, I guess I didn't ask for it to be distributed. Does everyone have the amendment? Representative Setzer is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment is very simple. What it will do is eliminate the sales tax on the nonprofit fairs that we have all across this state. These are the small nonprofit fairs, not the large one and not the state fair here in Raleigh. And I would ask for your support.
Further discussion, further debate. Representative Sain.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just maybe a question for staff. What would the fiscal impact be of this amendment?
$210,000. But please staff verify that.
Okay, staff's going to take a minute. Is there other debate? Representative Stamm.
You know, in most organizations, people will debate longer about
something they understand, like a $5 ticket, than hundreds of millions of dollars. And if we pass, you know, the House defeated this last year. So that's what the debate on the budget is going to be about, is about agricultural affairs. And the argument against doing this last year is just as good. It's just a rolling back of tax reform.
Further discussion, further debate? The question before the House or the committee is the adoption of Amendment ATM-14V2 by Representative Setzer. So many as favor the adoption of the amendment, say aye. All opposed, no. I think division on that. Give me a hands on all those voting aye.
Yep. 4, 5, 6, 7, 15, 16, 17, 18. You got 19? Huh?
I got 22.
You got? I got 19. Let's try it again. Keep your hands up, please. 1, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 18, 19, 20.
Are you a yes or no, Harry? Okay. What'd you get? What'd you get? All right. Hands down. So many as opposed. Well, please raise your hand. Okay, the no's were louder, but the ayes have prevailed. Hey, guys, we've only got two amendments left. We might be able to vote this out and not come back. ADT 49, Representative Hager.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What this bill does is it basically levels the playing field for all renewable technologies. It gives everybody... we had the solar under the safe harbor bill we passed about a month ago, which I think is the governor's already signed it. This just gives all the other technologies the same year to get all their ducks in a row before we end the tax credit.
Representative Jeter.
Question for staff, if I could, Mr. Chair. As I read the amendment, it says, for all renewable property except the property described in General Statute 105-129-157E. That's the safe harbor bill. I guess ultimately my question is, thank you, Representative Hager, is solar is also going to get the same one-year extension as the other renewables on this amendment. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, if you please, can I answer that?
Okay,
I'll be happy to ask my question to Representative Hager.
I'm sorry, the chair was somewhat distracted. Do you have a... Okay, does the gentleman yield?
I do. Thank you, Representative Jeter. Clayton, the speaker staff and I just discussed this. Actually, they get a little bit better because by the time, within the same year, they only have to have a percentage by the safe harbor bill finished by that date. So it's actually a little bit better for the solar folks.
Further discussion, further debate. Representative Sam.
Yeah, could somebody, on page 3 of our fiscal note, could somebody tell me what the effect of this amendment would be on the fiscal note for renewable energy tax credit? Bottom of page 3, like what figures would be put in there instead of the 47 and 94 millions if the amendment passes?
Mr. Tart.
So I think it's there's a couple of things to take into consideration about your question. The fiscal memo, the reference you're talking about, shows the entire cost of extending the renewable energy credit for 2 years for solar and for 4 years for non-solar. There's already a safe harbor bill passed that that accounts for 36 or 37 million of this in 16-17. So this would result in significantly lower money than is on this fiscal memo. I'm going to need a minute to
get that together, and I'll give it to you. Mr. Chairman, I think I could probably answer that a little bit. If you give me a second, I'd appreciate it.
All right. Do you have the number now, or are you going to calculate?
I do know the numbers, yes.
All right. Thank you. Just gentlemen recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Safe Harbor bill is a 35% tax credit, 7% spread over 5 years. The fiscal note for the Safe Harbor bill put in $36.7 million per year, which ended up being around $175 million for the total Safe Harbor bill fiscal cost. This, in my opinion, wouldn't change because you still have the 1 year, and this just goes out to the 1 year. The 36.7 is the first year, the first 7% of the Safe Harbor bill, with the additional 10.3 added on there for the extension of all the other technologies.
All right. Representative Jeter?
If my memory serves on the Safe Harbor bill, that extension for solar was only on projects that were 80% complete. Does this fix that issue?
I think, well, the gentleman's question is incomplete. Safe Harbor was 80% completed and money expended by the end of the year for 65 megawatts and smaller, while larger than 65 megawatts was 50% completed and expended by the end of the year.
Mr. Chairman, I think
correct, sir?
Yeah, it actually gives the solar act. By the time the end date comes, solar only has to be finished 80% for anything below 65 megawatts, and 65% for anything below 50 megawatts, or vice versa. All the other projects have to be finished by that date, so it actually gives solar an advantage.
Okay. Mr. Tart has calculated an answer for us. The gentleman's recognized.
Since this is on the non-solar piece, Representative Stan, this would reduce revenues by approximately $7 million for a five-year period beginning the 16-17 fiscal year, and that's understanding that the $37 million of the Safe Harbor is already taken into account in the availability statement. So you're talking this amendment would reduce revenues by approximately $7 million per year for 5 years beginning in 16-17.
Representative Sain.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I guess my question is for the amendment sponsor, because I'm not clear, and I'm sorry I don't have an amendment before me, and it's Mr. Jeter's question as well. You stated that it's actually much better for solar. Can you explain that a little further for me, because I didn't quite understand.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Representative. If you remember the Safe Harbor bill, it says, I think, that anything below 65 megawatts by 1/1/17 has to be at 80%. So it doesn't have to be completed, just at 80%. And anything above 65 megawatts only has to be 50% completed by 1/1/2017. This bill keeps that intact, so you don't have to be finished with a solar project by 1/1/2017. 80% and 50% respectively for larger projects. But this does hold all the other technologies that have to be finished by that date. So you have to be 100% completed by that date for all the other technologies. So it actually gives solar a little bit of room in the fact that you can still have 20% not completed by 1/1/17 and 35% not completed with any of those projects over 65 megawatts.
Thank you. I've had some comments from staff, and I'm going to ask Ms. Fennell to...
I thought it might be helpful if I just gave a broad overview of the amendment. What the amendment basically does is it would allow the renewable energy credit to be extended for everyone for an additional year through 2017. But what it does is it accommodates the renewable energy safe harbor bill that was already passed by the General Assembly and signed by the governor on 4/30. So for renewable energy to get the credit, it will have to comply with the provisions of the safe harbor bill, and it will have to be 50% or 80% complete, depending on the capacity, as Chairman Brawley and Representative Hager described. So that is the full effect of the bill. It is extending it for all for a year, but for solar, they will have to have additional requirements in order to comply with that extra year.
Are there any questions for Ms. Fennell? Representative Steinberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm totally confused, and I would like to ask the amendment sponsor a direct question, if I may.
Does the gentleman yield?
I do. Only for direct questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Hager.
It is my understanding that if this amendment passes, I say it's my understanding, who in Sam Hill knows, I don't know what I'm understanding, but if this amendment passes, that will have, moving forward, a negative impact on wind energy projects that are, and we have a lot of them over in these tier one counties over in eastern North Carolina, both that are on the books and some that are endeavoring to get started. Is that in fact the case, that this would have, in terms of our participation, that this would have a negative impact on those, yes or no?
Thank you. Thank you, Rev. Steinberg. You know, a politician can't answer just yes or no. Well, number one, it's John Bell's birthday day, too, by the way. Just want y'all to know that. Second is that if everything's kept as is, and if none of this piece was in the House Bill 97, then by the end of this year, solar, everybody would be done except for the Safe Harbor Bill, the wind, poultry, and swine, because the sunset of the renewable credit ends this year. This amendment right here, the piece in the House Bill 97, pushes it out to 4 years. I brought it back to right under the Safe Harbor Bill for the same year the Safe Harbor Bill gets.
Okay, I just wanted to make an announcement. Speaker's going to delay the session. We're having so much fun, he doesn't want us to have to quit and come back later. Did you want to be recognized to speak on the amendment, Representative Lupke, or?
No, Representative
Jeter.
I know that I'm not the brightest bulb in the history of the world, and I apologize. My wife tells me frequently. I guess my thought process, and I'm going to walk through this, and I want to do this out loud just so I understand what I'm talking about. Sounds like to me what we're saying is for swine, poultry, and all those other renewables, we're going to extend that for a year as it is currently done. For solar, we're not. We're going to let them live with the safe harbor language, which says they have to be 80% complete or 60% complete based on other things. If we're actually doing a true one-year extension, then solar would, for lack of a better term, be better off if they didn't have the safe harbor language and they just got the one-year extension as swine and poultry is getting. Am I correct in that assumption, Ms. Fennell?
Okay.
Well, for renewable energy folks that generate with solar, they will have to comply with greater requirements under the Safe Harbor Bill. So they will have greater requirements being done, for example, the 50 or 80% completion by the end of 2016. And those provisions will not apply to all the other renewables.
Follow up. Representative Jeter, do you wish to follow up?
Well, I guess my concern is, and I appreciate Representative Hager has been great to me this whole process, and I'm not trying to be difficult, but I understand in the safe harbor language, swine and poultry would have to be 100%. But what we're saying is they're no longer applicable to the safe harbor language. They get a year extension carte blanche, no matter what. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, that is correct. For all renewables except for solar, they get a one-year extension one way to describe it would be with no sort of procedures they have to jump through to get that extension. They just get a straight extension.
Follow up.
So, just so I understand this correctly, every renewable gets a one-year extension with no codicils, no caveats, no strings, and solar gets the Safe Harbor Act.
Yes. So all renewable is extended except for solar with no strings, and then the Safe Harbor Act.
Yeah. Representative Sain.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I, too, am probably as equally confused. And my question would be for Representative Hager, if he'd accept another direct question.
Yes, sir.
And part of my confusion is knowing your past support of solar and some of the renewables. I just want to be sure that to pass your amendment, we're supporting those renewable industries.
We are. We're actually supporting the deal that we all made that Representative Jeter and Representative Millis and I and Representative Time was involved. We're supporting the deal we made with those folks and the fact that in the same deal that we had to go back and change once they figured they had made a bad deal earlier.
So we actually changed the deal as it passed in House Bill 760. So we're just making sure, actually, and this is another modification from that deal, actually. So this will be the second or third modification from that deal, but we're willing to make it. And for Representative Jeter's question, swine and everybody else wasn't covered under Safe Harbor, just solar. So that's kind of why they got it. And the deal we made to get Safe Harbor passed, too, was part of that whole big deal. This actually is including that. And as this is put forward now, to extend it 4 years for everything else and 2 years for solar, is a violation of that deal we made. We all put a deal together. We all set the table. Representative Jeter was involved in it, and he can probably would agree with me. So we were just trying to maintain the same deal, try to keep everybody from going crazy at this, because there are other things I'm sure that we could go after, but we're not, because we're staying with the deal.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. Follow up. Just a commentary, Representative Hager. I was absent for that deal, so when we say we, I just want to point that out.
I appreciate that. Unfortunately, Representative Jeter was negotiating for you guys.
Further discussion, further debate. The question before the committee is the adoption of Amendment ATD 49V5. So many as favor adoption of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The opinion of the chair, raise your hand for aye.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this amendment is last but not least, and if we could get order, Mr. Chairman.
Will the committee come to order, please? Gentlemen's recognized.
I mean, seriously, wait until they have their finished with their conversation. It really is distracting, honestly.
Representative Sane.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it. I said this is last but not least because it's about restoring the earned income tax credit. The earned income tax credit is just that. It's a tax credit for those who earn income. It's for working, lower income people, lower middle class, poor people. And it provides them a credit precisely because their income is so low that they cannot make a living without a tax credit. Ours is based on the federal tax credit. Those who follow this issue know that President Reagan was a big fan of this. To make it bipartisan, President Clinton got behind it too. But the real person, the real mover and shaker behind this was President Reagan, because President Reagan understood that there were a lot of working people. This amendment restores something that we had for 5 years in the late 2000s, and I would ask you that you support this amendment.
Representative Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, if we're going to look at this against the federal program, I think we're looking at something between 20% and 25% fraud. It's what the number three redistribution of wealth programs behind, I think, food stamps. Like 40% of the people who may be eligible for this actually got it. What else could go wrong?
Representative Zoka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the history of this, as you have stated, is quite accurate. I would just like to say that I've done research on this, and the U.S. Department of the Treasury has audited this program at the federal level just about every year since it's begun. And last year that North Carolina had the earned income tax credit, we paid out approximately $112 million. As Representative Adams alluded to, the fraud rate when it first was being audited in the early 2000s was about 29%. In the last study that I read for 2012, that the verified fraud rate had dropped down to 25%. So that would mean, and I have no reason to believe that North Carolinians are more fraudulent or less fraudulent than any other state across the union. So I am extrapolating the national rate of fraud to North Carolina. I will grant you that. But 25% of $112 million is $28 million. And even if the number is 20%, I still have great problems with a program that has this much verified fraud in voting for that. And I would respectfully ask members of the committee to vote no on this.
Representative Stamm,
even if there were no fraud, there's a huge difference between the federal program and the state. When Reagan introduced it, it was to offset Medicare taxes that working poor people pay. But they don't, North Carolina doesn't collect those taxes. It's not an offset. It's just a...
Further discussion, further debate. Semenya's favorite, Representative Lipke is recognized for a second time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's really very important for us to not believe that just because someone finds some fraud in one group, that there is no fraud through the entire tax code. The whole idea that somehow working people are more fraudulent than people on the upper end just seems to be not defensible. And as far as what is it that people are needing in terms of help, they're paying sales taxes, they're paying fees, they're paying property taxes through their landlords, they're paying for many, many things. And if they were to have this tax credit, they could spend more, put more money into the economy. It is a fair thing to do. We do not do much around this General Assembly for the lower 20%. And I ask you to think about that lower 20% and this time give them a break and support this earned income tax credit. Thank you.
Representative Collins.
I beg to differ with the last comment. We do think about the lower 20% a lot. I think about them every time I vote to try to keep our electricity rates lower or get them even lower, and not to vote to give tax credits to people like Bank of America and Blue Cross Blue Shield who buy out the tax credits we just decided to extend another 4 years. But anyway, beyond that, what we have done for the lower 20% is lower, since I've been here, is lower the state sales tax by 16% and raise the 0% tax bracket. Now, I looked it up, and the people in my two counties only benefited from the EITC by a total of about $115, $120 a year. What we've done in rolling back taxes gives them much more benefit than $115 a year, so I'm going to vote against this amendment.
Further discussion? Representative Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and once again, I want to put this vote into perspective for everyone. And we just heard that because people have gotten tax relief in North Carolina, they should not get any further tax relief. And it seems that's the only time we have that kind of standard is when we deal with the least of these. If we eliminated our tax code for anyone committing fraud or failing to properly or fully report, then we'd have a larger percentage that would be reflected. So I would hope that people would vote based on the benefits of this policy, helping small business and keeping revenues in the community so we can move our small businesses forward and give our citizens a chance. Many folks, $100 or $250 is nothing to them. I have a large percentage of people who are in my district. We have a 20% poverty rate, whether people believe it or not, in the city of Durham and in Durham County. And so while many of us may sit here and be in a position of privilege, 120 out of 10 million, these type efforts on our part to provide an opportunity for the least of these will go a long way in helping North Carolina small businesses recover, something that we need to concentrate on as well.
Representative Dollar.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize for belaboring the point, but I do think that it should be noted that it is not just tax policy in which we deal with the least of these. We deal with the least of these in our appropriations policy. And we have spent and will be spending in this upcoming budget a considerable amount of money for low-income individuals in terms of health care, in terms of education, in terms of public safety, just a very wide range of areas that we invest money in that the state has that benefits all citizens and certainly benefits those citizens who are lower income. And I think that we've actually got a very good record of that despite the recession.
Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very brief. Just wanted to make the point, sort of echoing what Representative Collins, Representative Stam have said. We, in the most recent round of tax reform, increased the standard deduction for most of our filers, or another way to say the standard deduction is the 0% rate, the amount of money you can earn in North Carolina before you have to pay taxes. For a filer that was married filing jointly, it was $6,000. It's now $15,000. You can now earn $15,000 tax-free in our state. What that translates into, if you use the 5.8% tax rate, is about $405. That's four times the amount of the average EITC. I take great issue with the fact that we have not and continue to strive to better the lives of the working families in the state and to increase their ability to fully participate in our economy. I think we need to do more things that let them keep more of the money that they earn. I certainly am open to that, but the earned income tax credit is not the way to do it.
Further discussion, further debate. The question before the committee is the adoption of Amendment ASV 42, Restore EITC. So many as favor the adoption of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The noes have it. We are waiting on reproduction of one more amendment. They're making copies now. That'll be brought forward by Representative Jeter. At this time, I will recognize debate on the bill as amended. If anyone wishes to begin comment. Representative Lupke.
Well, I was waiting for others to pipe up, but it seems like a lot of people just are happy to go home. So others go to session. Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, one of the biggest things we have in North Carolina is a shortage of funding for public education. That is a reality. That reality can be seen by public education funding over the last 4 years. It's just not adequate for our school systems. If you doubt that, go talk to your school administrators, talk to your teachers about how funding is inadequate. And why that matters here is that in this bill, we have not taken any opportunity to recognize the need for more public education funding by looking at things such as the increased deduction, the increased reduction of the corporate income tax, and ask ourselves whether we couldn't, rather than having the trigger kick in with $100 million or whatever it will end up being, rather than having that come up, that we think in terms of how we can have more money in this committee, raised in this committee, which can help public education and other needs in this state. So the failure for us in this committee to bring along more revenue to help Chairman Dollar and others in the Appropriations Committee is a major shortcoming of the bill beyond a number of the amendments that should have, in my judgment, been passed. But the underlying point never came up in discussion, which is that revenue is needed in order to fund our public schools adequately. We do not have enough revenue. This was the place to do it. I'm sorry, I can't support this bill.
Representative Dollar.
You know, I appreciate the gentleman's concern, but I would point out, since appropriations for education were mentioned, that among the things that are in the bill in the draft that was put out today, $100 million for average daily membership growth, $35 million for raising starting teacher pay to a minimum of $35,000, $65 million to move teachers along the step, additional money for 2%, I think it's probably north of $100 million for 2% increase for all teachers. And that's just what we're looking to do this year. I think you can add up those numbers and see that that's substantial. And on top of that, we have money for digital. And, of course, the education chairs will lay out this package and discuss it in detail tomorrow. I would gently remind the gentleman that it was during his time in leadership that the education budget was cut by $1 billion in K-12. I mean, it's right there in the numbers. It's been there in the numbers. And it was under this leadership that we're able to restore that $1 billion. So even though, you know, others may put rhetoric out there, the numbers don't back it up. Now, in fairness, at that time, when that was done, we were getting ready to go into a very deep recession. But I think that people ought to recognize the full scope of the picture, what has been restored over the course of the last 4 years, and what we are preparing to invest in this week in terms of a House budget, which for education will be very substantial.
Further discussion, further debate. Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask the bill sponsor a question. Representative Sain, can you explain why the increase in North Carolina medical examiner autopsy fee is necessary, and why it's appropriate to use this form of fee to cover what we think will be appropriated.
Representative Meyer, thank you for the question. And as you know, this bill is a culmination of many ideas. I don't know that I have the answer for you, so I'll defer that to staff, Mr. Chairman, if they have any type of commentary on that, please.
That's in reference to the autopsy fees. That'd be Ms. Thomas. Ms. Thomas.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Gentlemen, repeat the question. Representative Meyer.
I can repeat the question. Let me amend the question slightly, because I'm not sure it is a question for staff. I'm concerned that, given the answer that Ms. Thomas already gave my earlier question, which was seeking a little bit of knowledge about this, if the increase of fee here is going to be put upon counties, then it will bring money into our general revenue fund, but it's going to come at the expense of taxpayers in their county tax base. And we've already put a lot of burdens onto them. I know we'd like to do some things to improve the effectiveness of our medical examiners statewide. What I'm curious about is, why is the best way to increase the effectiveness of our medical examiners to do it through this type of fee with that type of burden onto local counties?
Just to clarify, that the medical examiner's fee does not come to the state. That increase does not come to the state. The increased fee is being paid directly to the 450 individual medical examiners around the state.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. So, again, my question for the bill sponsor is, why do you want this fee to be paid by counties, maybe, and I'll change again, rather than out of the general fund or another type of expenditure?
Representative Meyer, as I indicated, you know, this is a culmination of many interests. I'm trying to recall the conversation that we had around it. I just can't recall it. And I was hoping that some of my colleagues would step up. Some of my co-chairs.
Yep.
Representative, I've got Warren and, well, I'll tell you what, Representative Dollar, if you go ahead and take that one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the short answer to your question is this is an existing fee. It's an existing fee structure to pay for these, and this is being increased and in the existing structure so that we can appropriately cover the cost and so that we can make sure that the quality of these examinations are appropriate. I think there was quite a bit of coverage about problems in the system, and this is part of one of the fixes. If folks are concerned about counties, please be assured that when you go back and you look at all the details of the budget, you will find that this budget treats the counties very kindly and sends a number of dollars in the health and human service areas and some other areas to the counties to support a variety of initiatives.
Representative Collins.
Yeah, I think if I remember, this is showing, it looks like to me, a negative $110,000. I think the state, through the DHHS, pays a lot of these fees. Is that not correct? I mean, this is showing a negative for us. This is not money we're making. This is money we're paying.
Representative Jeter is recognized to send forward an amendment, ADT 50-V2. Does everybody have the amendment? Representative Jeter.
It's a really good amendment, but I, with all the confusion over Representative Hager's amendment and with all the discussions he and I have talked on solar over the past 3 weeks, I would classify ad nauseum. This just is clarifying that says everybody gets a clean extension for 1 year on the renewable energy tax credit, so that no one has to play by the rules of safe harbor. No one has the contingencies. Everybody gets a 1 year clean extension for renewable energy tax credit.
Is there further discussion on the amendment? Representative Jones.
My question for staff is there any fiscal impact of this amendment? I assume it would not be in the first year, perhaps, but after that there would be.
Yeah, if you turn it to the fiscal memo, it might help to sort of walk you through it. If you're there at that table where you see the renewable energy tax credit, it shows a $47 million cost. In 16-17, about 37 of that is already taken into account in availability because of the safe harbor provision that was enacted. So if you passed the bill to include the residual amount of solar, as you're referring to, and also the non-solar, that the impact does not change in 16-17. The impact changes in the out years significantly. It would be down to $44 million per year starting in 17-18 instead of 94.
So a follow-up?
Can I follow up on that?
Okay, follow-up.
So what you're saying is, if this passes, it significantly reduces the cost to the state moving forward.
Correct, in the out years it does.
Representative Steinberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative G, are you taking another stab at Representative Hager's efforts here with this bill moving forward in terms of renewable energy and helping to curb our involvement and future projects and so forth in the East and elsewhere?
Does the gentleman yield for the question?
I'll be happy to yield for the accusation. I have spent the past 3 years of my tenure in this building doing everything I can to help the renewable energy industry. I have met with people across the state. I have done everything I could. If people actually look at the facts of what has happened over the last month, and not recognize what is played out. And they think that somehow I am harming this industry, then I question their ability to serve in this building.
Follow up. Further discussion, further debate. The question is the adoption of... Sorry, Representative Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and just a brief comment. I appreciate everyone taking time this evening and even staying late. We seem to have lost sight of something that's important here in North Carolina, though, as we make an effort to bring the whole state forward. I talked briefly before about the question of poverty, and we talked about tax relief and unraveling tax relief, and we've got the 35% of people who are paying more in taxes are the folks who can least afford it, but we seem to have washed that away. But poverty stayed consistent in North Carolina from 2013 till now. 18% of our state is living in poverty, and we have the 11th highest poverty rate in the United States. And so we could do more. We decided not to do more. We have the 12th highest child poverty rate. We could do more, but it appears we're deciding not to do more for those North Carolinians. 1.7 million North Carolinians that I'm talking about that are dependent on us to do more for them. We've got...
Is the gentleman debating the amendment or the bill?
The bill.
Well, we're on the amendment on the solar energy piece.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you want me to finish my statement, or you want me to
Go ahead and finish.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate it. We have the 45th highest poverty rate in rural counties in 2013, and now we had 45 counties in poverty. We're continuing in poverty, and we aren't doing what's necessary here to get the resources North Carolina needs to move this 1.7 million individuals forward. So I appreciate your time on this finance plan, and I hope that we can address those 1.7 million North Carolinians at some point in this process.
Further discussion on the amendment. Mr. Representative Sain.
Yeah, just a question, because there was confusion earlier for Representative Hager. Is this something that you agree with, you, sir?
I'm still thinking about it.
Further discussion, further debate. Question before the committee is the adoption of Amendment ADT 50V2. So many in favor of the amendment say aye. Opposed, no.
No.
The decision of the chair, the noes have it. The noes seem to have it. The noes do have it. The amendment fails. So, at this point, further discussion, further debate? Yeah, I'll accept that. So many as favor the amendment, please raise your hand. Okay. Y'all agree? All right. Thank you. So many as opposed, please raise your hand. The amendment fails 15 to 21. Further discussion, further debate. Representative Sain is recognized for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, yes. I move that the PCS, as amended, be adopted by the committee and with a referral to appropriations.
The motion by Representative Sain that House Bill, the committee substitute for House Bill 97, as amended, be rolled into a new committee substitute. Staff is authorized to make grammatical and technical corrections, reporting back to the floor with a serial referral to appropriations. So many as favor the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
In the opinion of the chair, the motion...
All in favor of passage of the House Committee substitute for 97, please raise your hands. Thank you. Those opposed, please raise your hand. The vote is 19 in favor, 16 against. The PCS is adopted. We are adjourned.